I want to welcome everybody to the first OUJLIC Shir Kali of the Parsha of the fall semester. It's really great to have you back. We ran this program, this Shir series, last semester for the first time at the suggestion of both the OUJLIC men's program and the OUJLIC women's program. There was a feeling that it was important that there be once a week, middle of the week, at a free hour where it's easy for students, easy for commuters, easy for people coming to live on campus to get something to really pump up their week with Torah at a really convenient time, and on something as klali as the Parsha as well. And as you can see from the room around you, Baruch Hashem, it seems to have a draw, certainly for the first one. Hopefully it'll continue. So we're really glad to bring this Shir series back as a joint program of the OUJLIC men's program and the OUJLIC women's program. It's really great to have you all here. We're going to be jumping in where it's always, for me, easier to transition into the beginning of a Sefer so we can build up a Sefer together. But we're standing in the middle of Sefer Devarim. And so we're going to jump into Parshat Shoftim. And instead of having Parshat Shoftim, kind of using it as a way to get into Sefer Devarim, we're actually going to be even a lot more local within the Parsha than we usually are. So much so we're going to focus in on one paragraph. So much of that we're going to focus in on one pasuk. And that will hopefully open up worlds for us on a particular time of year, which is nowhere near now, related to a time of year that is near now, and give us a different way of looking at the Parsha and kind of understanding what we're really meant to accomplish in this world in a different way from a different perspective. That comes from a paragraph at the very end of the Parsha. It's the second to last paragraph in the Parsha. It's source number one on your sheets. And it talks about what happens when we go into Eretz Yisrael and we lay siege to a city. And there are certain parameters of how we can lay siege to a city. The Torah says, source number one, Devarim Perek Chaf, Ki Tatsura El Ir, when you go to besiege a city, Yamim Rabim, Lilachem Aleh, to go to wage war against it, Latafsa, to conquer it, Lo Tashchit Et Eitza, Lindoach Alav Garzen, Ki Yemenu Tochal. Don't go and cut down trees. Don't cut down fruit trees when you're going to lay siege to the city in order to attack and go and try to break through into the city. Because you eat from those trees. Votolo Tichro, so don't cut them down. Why? Comes a very mysterious pasuk. Ki ha'adam eitz hasadeh. Because mankind, because a human being, is a tree of the field. Seemingly, since there is this very obvious, direct parallel between trees and human beings, specifically fruit trees and human beings, that's why you can't cut those down to lay siege to the city. Lavomi panecha b'matzor. Rather, says the next pasuk, you can only cut down non-fruit trees, and those you can use to lay siege to the city and to break through the walls. The presumption here in this pasuk, on the pshat of the pasuk, ironically, a lot of the mefarshim are going to work to try to create a pshat that's not a pshat. Because what does it mean? Man is a tree. So they're going to try to work their way around the pasuk. But the simple meaning of the pasuk, the words of the pasuk themselves, are telling us that mankind is a tree. That you're a tree, and you're a tree, and you're a tree. Which sounds very, I don't know, uninspiring. Right? Look outside and you see a tree. Baruch Hashem, we can't see trees. You look outside and you see a tree. Trees are nice, pretty maybe. They can have nice shapes, bark, wood, fruit, leaves. Great, but why am I a tree? What's the connection there? So much so that it has hashkafic implications as a pure parallel in the pasuk, and even halakhic implications in terms of what you can actually do or not do with those trees. So that's the question that we're going to address. To do that, we're going to examine a time of year which celebrates the fruit trees. What time in the year that we have celebrates the fruit trees? Louder. I don't have faith in you guys. Tu Bishvat. So why are we talking about Tu Bishvat? One is this pasuk is what really gives birth to a lot of discussions about Tu Bishvat. All discussions about Tu Bishvat are inevitably linked back to this verse. And also, from somewhat of a selfish perspective, not only do I love Tu Bishvat, but it almost never falls out during the semester. So we never get to talk about Tu Bishvat. Now, on top of that, we will link it back to the Parsha, and it is, I think, very relevant to this time of year. And we'll talk about how that links in. But we're going to take a journey into the wonderful world of Tu Bishvat, which have tremendous implications for every day of our lives, I think particularly also for this stage of our lives in college. and also, I think, to this time of the year. Are you ready for that journey? Ready to get into the trees? Let's do it. Okay. The first time that we see the concept of Tu'ishvat really emerge is in a Mishnah in Masechet Rosh Hashanah. And the sense that if you're already here is that there might be overlap with this time of year. Because almost all of the discussions of Tu'ishvat are in Masechet Rosh Hashanah. And whereas we stand here in Elul on the cusp of Rosh Hashanah, suddenly we're talking about Tu'ishvat. Interesting that there's already an overlap there. The very opening Mishnah in Masechet Rosh Hashanah points out that there are actually four times of year that are Rosh Hashanah. There are four stations in the year that act as a Rosh Hashanah. Take a look inside in source number 2. Arba Rosh Hashanim Heim, says the Mishnah. There are four Rosh Hashanah. The first one is Be'chad B'Nisan, on the first of Nisan, which is Rosh Hashanah L'Mlachim V'L'Ragalim. All of these have, of course, definitive halachic implications, which is what the whole beginning of Masechet Rosh Hashanah deals with. What does it mean that it's Rosh Hashanah for the kings? What does it mean that it's Rosh Hashanah for the three primary Torah-mandated holidays? There are halachic implications for all these things, and obviously also hashkafic implications, philosophical implications. So the first one is the first of Nisan. The second one is Be'chad Be'elul, the first of Elul, is Rosh Hashanah L'Maaser Behema. And there's a machlok up there with Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon Omrim, Be'chad B'Tishrei. Then also, Echad B'Tishrei is the third Rosh Hashanah, which is Rosh Hashanah L'Shanim, L'Shmitin, Uli Ovlot, L'Netiya, Uli Rakot. The first of Tishrei is Rosh Hashanah L'Shanim. That's the Rosh Hashanah that we're familiar with, that we celebrate, that we engage in, that's coming up around a month from now. It's the beginning of the year for the years. Also for Shemitah and Yovel and for planting and for vegetables. Then we finally get to our topic. Be'achad b'shvat, the first day of Shvat, is Rosh Hashanah le'ilan. Is Rosh Hashanah for the tree. But we call it Tu b'shvat. And Aleph and Tetvav are not the same thing. And that's because it's a machloket. That's Kedivrei Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai says it's on the first of Shvat, and we pass him like Beit Hillel. Beit Hillel omrim b'chamishah sarbo, that the 15th of Shvat is Tu b'shvat. Or rather, the 15th of Shvat is Rosh Hashanah le'ilanot. It's the birthday of the trees. So we have four Rosh Hashanahs along the course of the year. What's interesting is that we don't celebrate all of them. We definitely celebrate, we definitely engage in Rosh Hashanah for the Shanim. That's coming up. That is Rosh Hashanah. That's definitionally Rosh Hashanah. But there's really only one other Rosh Hashanah that we do engage in. And that's Rosh Hashanah Aliyah, it's Tu B'Shvat. Which is very odd. Does anybody know what the halakhic implications are in terms of what we do on Tu B'Shvat or don't do on Tu B'Shvat? When Tu B'Shvat comes around, what changes? What makes it a holiday from a halakhic perspective when we're engaging in Tu B'Shvat? Anybody know? Everybody's favorite thing when it happens in davening? No tachanun. The guys immediately jumped in. Good. No tachanun. According to most poskim, no tachanun. And no hespedim, no eulogies. Now what's really odd about that is that it is the only quote-unquote holiday in the entire cycle of the year, without any other exception, the only holiday in the entire cycle of the year that has absolutely no, zero, historical component to it. There are other holidays where the only thing that we do is don't say tachanun, and we don't have hespedim. Tu B'Av, which we just commemorated, is one of them, but there's many historical events linked to Tu B'Av. Lag BaOmer is another one. There are many historical events linked to Lag BaOmer. There is no historical component to Tu B'Shvat. We just celebrate it because it's the birthday of the trees, which is super weird. In and of itself. On top of that, we just all read the same Mishnah together. And I gotta tell you, half of the produce world is very angry and making a hashtag right now. They're up in arms. You know which other half of the produce world is super angry? You tell me. The vegetables! They also have a Rosh Hashanah. The first of Tishrei is the Rosh Hashanah Le'irakot. So there are other agricultural Rosh Hashanah moments even in this very Mishnah. And yet we commemorate and we celebrate we celebrate Tu Bishvat. Not only do we not, it's not just that we don't say Tachon, and it's not just that there's no Espedim. Al Pi Kabbalah, there's also, over time, there's emerged the concept of Tu Bishvat Seder, and we eat fruit, and we celebrate fruit, and we talk about fruit, a whole glorious, beautiful Tu Bishvat Seder. Does anybody at their Rosh Hashanah tables, after davening Friday night and getting into it's the new year, sit down and say, forget the simanim, break out as many vegetables as you can, we are celebrating the new year of the vegetables? Does anybody do that? If you do, it's so interesting. I would love to hear where your mail comes from. To my knowledge, it doesn't exist. Why do we celebrate fruit and not vegetables? If you were to tell me don't celebrate either, I would say, of course, there's no human component. But why do we celebrate one and not the other? Question number one, which clearly indicates there's something unique about fruit and fruit trees. Now, if we wanted to celebrate the new year for the fruit, we wanted to celebrate the new year for the fruit trees. If you're thinking about the yearly cycle of what the fruit tree goes through, what might be a great place, just thinking about a tree and thinking about fruit, where would you put Rosh Hashanah for the fruit trees? At what stage of the year of the fruit tree? Think for a minute. There are some really kind of obvious glaring moments in the year of a fruit tree, and there's very few. It doesn't have that exciting of a life. What would be an incredibly important moment in the yearly cycle of a fruit tree? Now we're anti-agricultural society that has no idea where fruit comes from. Yes. What do you got? When you pick the fruit. Great. Simple answer. Don't be super complicated. Let's have the Rosh Hashanah for the fruit trees be at the time that we pick the fruit. Excellent. I'm with you, Devorah. Great answer. Or, on the flip side, what other option is it? What other option could you have? When's the beginning of the life of a tree? When you plant it. So we know that there is a Rosh Hashanah. We just read it in the Mishnah also. Rosh Hashanah l'nitia, for when we plant trees, with halakhic implications. If I plant a tree a few months before Tishrei, the second that Tishrei comes, boom, it's now 1 year old. Doesn't matter when I planted it. As long as I planted it before Tishrei, in terms of Orla, the halakhic implication of Orla, Tishrei comes, year one is over. So we do commemorate, we do recognize there are halakhic implications to the yearly cycle by the planting of the tree. And those are the two obvious stages. There's the planting and there's the picking. Fantastic. And as we all know, we celebrate Tu Bishvat at the time of year when the tree is in full bloom, the leaves are vibrant, the fruit are ready to be picked and they're juicy, we're ready to sink our teeth into them. That's when we... No, it's not. When do we celebrate Tu Bishvat? In the dead of the winter, with horrible dead trees outside, with no leaves, and no fruit, and nothing happening, and it's cold, and I don't even notice they're fruit trees. That's when we celebrate Tu Bishvat. You both have great answers. Do it by the planting, or do it by the picking, but what's happening in the middle of the winter? That's going to be Rosh Hashanah le'ilan? It's even more odd because we recognize both of those stations in the yearly cycle of the tree. As we mentioned before in the very opening Mishnah that we read, there is a Rosh Hashanah l'nitiyah. The Rosh Hashanah for the planting, we said, is on the first of Tishrei. That's for the planting. And if we take a look in source number 4, again, all of these are discussions in Masechet Rosh Hashanah, we have another Mishnah that says, Be'arba'a prakim ha'olam nidon, that the world is judged at 4 different times, about 4 different things. Be'pesach ala tvu'a, on Pesach, when we bring the Omer offering, we're judged about the produce in terms of what's happening on the field, in terms of what's coming up, in terms of wheat and barley and the produce of the fields. That's at Pesach. Be'atzeret, Devorah, you're right, Be'atzeret, al peirot ha'ilan. We're actually judged about the produce of the fruit trees. But it happens on Atzeret. When Chazal say Atzeret, what do they mean? Shavuot. When is Shavuot? Sivan. So in Sivan, were judged about the actual produce. Now, what would have been amazing is either to have Rosh Hashanah Ilan be at Tishrei at the planting, or on Sivan at the picking of the fruit. But it chooses neither. Instead, it chooses to celebrate Rosh Hashanah Ilan where? It's the name of the holiday. Tu Bishvat. Over here. Question is, if that's nowhere near the Nitiyah, or the Likita, the planting or the picking, what is happening in Shvat? And if you were curious about that, like I was curious about that, the Gemara was curious about that as well. And the Gemara addresses it directly in source number 5. Source number 5. It quotes our Mishnah, Be'achad bishvat Rosh Hashanah le'ilan. The first of Shvat is the Rosh Hashanah for the Ilan, for the tree. The Gemara says, my time, why? What is going on then that it would make a difference? So at the end of that paragraph, the bottom line is, Ho'il v'yatz'u rov gishmei shana. That's the answer of the Gemara. The majority of the rains of the season have fallen. So for those of you who are familiar with how things work in Eretz Yisrael, there's a rainy season. And it basically only rains in the rainy season. When does the rainy season begin? Around Sukkot time, which is when we say Morid HaGeshem. We start saying Morid HaGeshem. And then later on, we start adding Betim Tal Umatar Livracha. And we say it all throughout the winter time. And we stop at the end at Nisan when it fully comes to a close. So since by Shvat, the majority of the rains of the season have fallen, that's why it's Tu Bishvat. That's why we're celebrating the birthday of the trees. Clear? No. So Rashi says, that's great that you gave an answer, but let's give some content to that answer. Why does that make a difference? So Rashi gives us a little bit more to work with in source number 6. He explains, Shekvar avar rov yemot hagishamim, that time of the rainy season has mostly passed, Shuzman revia, ve'ala hasaraf be'ilanot, that at that time the sap is going up in the trees. V'nimsa hapirot chontim me'ata. And the process of chanata begins then. Anybody know what chanata is? So when we start to produce fruit, the first stage is the little bit of budding that we see in the fruit tree. It's not even the stage where we see flowers yet. Where in the cycle of the year do we see the flowering? Also with all implications. Nisan. What happens in Nisan? We say Berkatiyot, we say a bracha on the new flowers. This is free flowering. This is the little bits of the beginning of the budding. Why does the budding start then, says Rashi? He explains that over the entire rainy season, what's happening is the tree is soaking in all of that water. And now what it's doing is it's taking all that water that it soaked up and it's transforming it into sap. That sap is rising in the tree, and at this time of Tu Bishvat, it's just starting to create the beginning of the first buds that will become flowers, that will become fruits. That's Chanata, the first budding. Now, at least we know why, at least we know there's something that happens in Shvat. Why that's preferable to the planting or the picking is still unclear. But somehow, this is so integral to the identity of a tree that this becomes the birthday of the tree. This becomes Rosh Hashanah Le'ilan. Now, we've plotted it up here on the board, and what comes out is something very interesting. Not only are there three distinct stations in the yearly cycle of a tree, in Tishrei for the planting, in Shvat for the budding, and in Sivan for the producing of fruit, it just so happens that they are exactly separated by an equal distance over the course of the year. The time of the planting goes from Tishrei, Cheshvan, Kislev, Tevet. The time of the Chanata through the producing of the fruit goes from Shvat, Adar, Nisan, and Iyar. And then the first producing the fruit, gathering the fruit, is gathered from Sivan Tammuz, Av and Elul. That each one of those stations creates a four-month piece of the year, creates three equal slices in the yearly cycle of the tree. Either that's fascinating to you, or you're wondering why we're still talking about trees. Either one is fine. But that's where we're at now. So let's add some content to that. Let's move along and now really start to get into it. What's happening here? Many of our sources indicate that every single year is a microcosm, is a miniature of a person's life. At Rosh Hashanah, we're reborn. We're given new life for a new year. We go and go through the course of the cycle of that year, which is a miniature of the entire lifespan. And in fact, the end of the cycle of that year comes to a close where? Interestingly, not at Rosh Hashanah, which is a whole discussion for another time. It goes even past Rosh Hashanah. Where does the cycle of the year really end? And then after that, Shmini Atzeret. That's really the close. The very end of Simchat Torah. The very Shmini Atzeret, Simchat Torah, the end of Sukkot, that's where it ends. Now, Shmini Atzeret and Simchat Torah and Sukkot have a different name. What other name does it have? Chag? Ha'asif. The time of the gathering in. And those who are familiar, all throughout Chumash, one of the terms used for death is Vayasef Elamav. That somehow, just like there's a conclusion to that cycle of the year, it's indicating conclusion to a person's life cycle as well. And so much of what's hidden behind the scenes, and we'll talk about it in Chol HaMoed Sukkot, that she's already planned. We'll talk about it in Shir Kali and Chol HaMoed Sukkot. So much of what it's about is somehow reaching into and touching upon the end of days. The reality of Sukkot, the reality of Shmini Atzeret, the reality of Simchat Torah, is all somehow about coming to a closure. We read Sefer Kohelet, which is a wise old Shlomo looking back at his life. The end of Kohelet talks about the splitting apart of the neshama and the guf. It's Chag HaAsif. Everything is finally coming to a close. There's a sense of finality to Sukkot, which is the end of the year, and therefore the end of a life cycle of a person, starting at Rosh Hashanah and coming to a conclusion at Sukkot. If that's true, and again, our sources indicate that that is so, what would be interesting is if we overlaid the cycle of the year of a human being on top of the cycle of the year of the tree and see what we find. And now things get interesting. If we overlay the cycle of the year of a person, starting with Rosh Hashanah, and taking it all the way around from Tishrei to Tishrei, and overlaying it with the cycle of the year of a tree. The way that my Rebbe suggests a potential way to break it down in terms of an actual number of years, which one can argue, and he puts forth as a suggestion, is that perhaps this first section takes us from ages 0 to 20. The second section takes us from ages 20 to 40. And the final section takes us from ages 40 to 60. Why would he suggest that the life cycle of a human being would take place over a cycle of 60 years when we know for sure people live much longer, can live and should live much longer than 60 years? So he has a few proofs as to why he thinks that that would be the number that we're working with and why the breakdown would then be 20-year chunks in that way. He suggests, first of all, we know from the Mishnah and Pirkei Avot that Shishim is the age of Zikna, that at that point a person transitions into a stage of life that is the elderly stage of life. It's a new stage of life. Another thing which is very interesting, which he points out, is that is the topic of birthdays in general. There's actually only one birthday that's recorded in Chumash. Whose birthday is recorded in Chumash? Paro, who we generally don't look up to. He's the only person whose birthday is noted in Chumash, and there's no source that clearly indicates that we should celebrate birthdays. We do, so no source indicates that from a Jewish perspective we should be celebrating birthdays, with the exception of one birthday. As Mary pointed out, he was there 20 years ago. 20 years ago, when Rav Avigdor Nevensol, the chief rabbi of the Old City of Yerushalayim, and a very close friend of his, and a gadol hador, Rav Yaakov Katz, both celebrated their 60th birthday around the same time. And you know what happened? The yeshiva threw a 60th birthday party for them. I imagine it didn't look like any of our birthday parties, but they threw a 60th birthday party for them. Why 60? What's unique, what's meaningful about 60, the age 60? So our sources tell us that if a person is chayav karet, that their life one of the understandings of what happens if a person is chayav karet is that they don't make it to 60, that their life will end before 60. And so what happens is that when a person makes it to 60, it means that they didn't do anything that would mechayav them karet. And so a person celebrates their 60th birthday as a sign that they have come to a point where they weren't chayav karet. They now know that that didn't, in the last 6 years, that never happened. Which also seems to indicate, hint to the fact that there's some sort of closure of that circle. That's not meant in any way to indicate that people don't go and live past 60 and don't do incredible things past 60. But there seems to be some sort of closure of the circle of life at that point. One last proof to that potentially is, what is the gematria? What letter is the gematria of the number 60? Fascinating. It happens to be a sum, a circle. That's somehow inherent in the number 60, somehow inherent in the number Samech, is a circle itself. It's reflected in the structure of the letter that embodies the number 60. So Moshe Rabbeinu lived until 120. When I was working on this year, I was thinking about the fact, what might it be about Moshe Rabbeinu that if this is true, that somehow he lived two lifetimes, or two planes of a lifetime, or two different experiences of a lifetime, food for thought, but that specifically Moshe Rabbeinu, who we always say, I may have Esrim Shana, because of Moshe Rabbeinu, Dafka is a double of 60, I don't have any answers or content, but it struck me as very interesting that specifically the age that we refer to is a double of that number. Food for thought. But presuming that that's true, then we break down that 60 into three equal parts. We get this 0 to 20, 20 to 40, and 40 to 60 breakdown. And let's talk about what then that would look like if we overlay that cycle of life. I keep getting defensive about that. I gave this once over at a drush and a shul, and some of the more elderly members of the came forward and after the drush and were like, "We're still doing stuff." And I was like, "I know, that wasn't the point." And if you want, maybe because in art, because both we live longer, and because we tend to extend childhood and adolescence far beyond where it should go. If you want to redistribute it, just practically, even though hashkafically that may not be true, to 0 to 25, 25 to 50, 50 to 75, 75 to 100, that's fine, redistribute however you want. But just in terms of the hashkafic piece, it just happens to fit in nicely. But it's not to limit the accomplishments of an individual past 60 years. Just working within the paradigm of 60. Okay? So if we overlay it, what happens? So the beginning of the life cycle of a tree is the planting. It's from the planting until the chanata. From around ages 0 to 20, 0 to 25. And what's happening at that time? What do we say is happening in the life cycle of a tree at that time? What is it doing? Say louder. It's taking in the water. Think about a child. When a child's born, or Shnali Ilan, for its planting, for its birth. When a child's born, during the beginning of its life, a child is a sponge. It soaks in everything. Everything around that child, it takes in and incorporates into itself. There's nothing that you can say or do in front of a child that the child will not catch, will not incorporate into its being, will not make a part of itself. That whole period of life is soaking in everything from the world around them. And I'm always like astounded. I have a 4.5-year-old daughter. So we try to every night. We're not always successful. We try to every night. We learn a little bit of Hilchot Shabbat at the dinner table every night. And this past weekend, we went to my father's house in the Five Towns, and he had a hammock that he got. And Aliza really wanted to go on the hammock. And so he set up the hammock. It had these two free stands, and it had the hammock in the middle. And I was curious. I just looked at Aliza, and I was like, Aliza, what malacha is it if you sit in a hammock on Shabbos? 4.5. I'm not going to ask how many of you in this room know the answer to that question. 4.5. We learned this like 2 months ago at the table, because there's always chaos at the table. There's another kid and there's the food and getting to bed. Amidst that chaos, we learned about this. And she looks at me and she goes, Kotzer. I said, amazing. And is this hammock an issue of Kotzer? Can you sit on this hammock on Shabbos? And she looks at me and she goes, yes. And I said, why? And she goes, because it's attached to the thing and it's not attached to the tree. 4.5. Everything that they see, they take in, they incorporate, it becomes a part of them. They soak in the world around them. There's a lot of implications in food for thought in terms of what we may have been exposed to during those years, and food for thought for the future we want to expose our children to as we go along life, because they take everything in. That takes us through childhood, through adolescence. And then comes that transition at age 20 or 25, irrelevant. We get to the place of chanata. Chanata is a transition from soaking in the water to doing what? What is the chanata process? What happens during these 4 months after chanata starts? Producing fruit. It's the time of the year, the 4 months, where the tree is actively working to produce fruit. Where it's meant to take all of that rainwater, everything it soaked up, turn it into sap, and utilize that sap to produce fruit. And that's exactly what's meant to happen at this stage of life. Again, whether you use the 20 to 40 paradigm or the 25 to 50 paradigm, or hey, go from 20 to 50, whatever. This time of life, around 20 to around 50, there seems to be, assuming that this overlay is correct, is the time of life in a human being's life when we're meant to produce fruit, when we're expected to produce fruit on every level of being. It's a time of life where on a physical level, where people start to have children, a woman's primary childbearing years end between the ages of 40 and 50. It becomes much more difficult after 40, and it usually ends for sure by 50. These are the literal time of the life where we produce physical fruit, but also intellectual fruit, spiritual fruit, emotional fruit. Where we build up our jobs, where we build up our families, where we build up what it is that we're doing, where we add people to the world, we're producing fruit in this world. That's this stage. That then would bring us to the age of 40 or 50. And what's the last stage? What happens there? What are we doing from Chag, from Shavuot all the way until Tishrei? Harvesting, gathering in. Somehow that last phase of that cycle of life is the gathering in of fruit. Somehow it's a more reflective stage, perhaps. A stage where we're not producing as much new. Again, people do produce tremendous new things at the end of their life as well. But it's a stage where, primarily, and you see this for those of you who have parents in that stage of life, and certainly grandparents in that stage of life, while they certainly are still producing, Bezrat Hashem, they spend so much time reflecting on their life, reflecting on their family, gathering together for simchas, the families that they produced, gathering together for holidays, the family they produced, gathering together the accomplishments of their lifetime and seeing what legacy they're going to leave behind. It's somehow a stage of the gathering in of the fruit that has been produced over the course of a lifetime. What emerges is that the cycle of the year of a fruit is exactly parallel to the cycle of a lifetime of a human being. And the reason, very simply, for that is, ki ha'adam eitz ha'sadeh. Because that pasuk was meant, very literally, that a person is the tree of the field. Now, what we still haven't answered yet is why fruit and not vegetables? And why is the Rosh Hashanah for the fruit trees defined by the chanata? Defined by the budding. Still, I would have said maybe the fruit. Still, I would have said maybe the planting. We haven't answered that fundamental question yet. We haven't answered the fundamental question of why fruit and not vegetables. And the answer to that is incredibly powerful. The Ritva indicates in Masechet Rosh Hashanah that the Rosh Hashanah for a thing follows the definitional essence of that thing itself. That's where its Rosh Hashanah falls. That's where it comes out. Thinking for vegetables for a moment. After one picks a vegetable, what happens next to that vegetable? Somebody's got to have a garden, right? Somebody's parents have a garden, somebody's grandparents have a garden, you've seen a video with a garden. What happens after you pick a vegetable? No, it doesn't. Watch a video. No, it doesn't. When you pick a vegetable, nothing happens. Every year you need to plant the vegetables anew. Vegetables are yearly. They do not continue to produce. What you plant is what you get. And therefore, the definitional Rosh Hashanah for the vegetable is by what it is. What you produce, what you gather into the vegetable, that's it. That's its identity. And that's why its Rosh Hashanah goes by the picking. Because that's all that it is. Whatever you pick, that's its identity. How does that differ? I'm going to go back to it. We need a chance to redeem yourself. How does that work by a fruit tree? How is a fruit tree different? It what?
Continues to grow.
Continues to grow, say better. Say more specifically. What does it do every year? Produces new it produces new fruit every year. Meaning the fruits are not the definition of the tree. Because it keeps producing fruit year in and year out. It's not just about the produce, the tree still remains. Meaning, when we celebrate and commemorate and dignify the Rosh Hashanah for the fruit trees, which word are we emphasizing in fruit trees? The tree, not the fruit. Rosh Hashanah, Tu Bishvat, is not Rosh Hashanah lepirot. This is Rosh Hashanah lepirot. We pick it in Sivan, and that we don't pay attention to. What actually are we celebrating on Tu Bishvat? Rosh Hashanah le Ilan. Why call it Rosh Hashanah le Ilan? Because we're celebrating the essence of the tree, not the fruit. And the essence of a tree is not in the planting. And the essence of a tree isn't even in the picking. This is the essence of a tree. What is deeply behind the scenes you're telling us? What's the essence of a tree all about? The essence of a tree is that it is an object. It's a living being, which is designed to soak in every ounce of rainwater over the course of the winter, to soak in as much rainwater as can, and its identity, its essence is, what it's judged on is, to what extent is it going to transform that rainwater into sap and produce fruit every year? To the extent that it takes all of that potential energy and it actualizes it in the world. That's the definition of an Ilan. That's why it's Rosh Hashanah. What that means for us is, Ki ha'adam eitz ha'sadeh, that we're all judged in the same way. That we're meant to soak in everything we can. Ages 0 to 20, 0 to 25. We're meant to soak in everything we can. There's still time left. We're not over yet, right? Soak in everything we can. And choose what it is that we're taking in. What are we taking into our eyes? What are we taking into our ears? What are we taking into our mouth? What are we taking into ourselves? What are we soaking in? And then we come to that transitional phase, which is around this time of life for everybody in this room. We come to that point, which is the most critical stage of who and what we are as being in the image of a tree. And we're asked, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu is asking us, to what extent are you taking every ounce of life force that I have given you, every ounce of Mayim Chayim that I've given you, of the living waters of Torah, of life that I've given you, to what extent are you taking that and transforming that potential Mayim Chaim into fruit in this world? Spiritually, emotionally, psychologically, physically, to what extent are you channeling every aspect, every ounce of life force in your being and directing it and using it to produce fruit? That's what we're being judged on. As being in the image of a tree on Tu Bishvat. Are we living up to what it means to be a tree? Are we living up to it? Are we taking advantage of every aspect of life force that we have, every moment of every day, everything that we've learned, everything that we're meant to accomplish? Are we channeling that Mayim Chaim into Peirot? Are we producing fruit in this world? Whole different perspective on what Tu Bishvat is about and how significant of a day that it is. It's a day that we're reminded of, on a hashva'ah level, on a comparison level, what we are, what we're here to do, and what we are meant to produce. And for us now to recognize that we're living on this border. These years, the college years, the years that you're in right now, where you're thinking about what you're taking in, how much time you're devoting to taking in more Torah, how much what you're taking in terms of your secular studies in order to what you're going to accomplish literally in terms of the work you're going to do in this world, searching for a spouse and deciding who it is that you're going to build your family with and who it is that you're going to build your house with, what fruit do you want to produce as you take in the end before you make certain decisions which you can go back on, you can go back to school, you can restart. But generally speaking, what is the arc of your life going to take based on what you take in now? And how focused are you on producing fruit every minute of your life and for the rest of your life? There's a concept of hazman me'orer et ha'kriya, that the time that we're in brings about the Torah reading that we have. Hazman Morer Takriya. So on Pesach, what do we read about in Shul on Pesach? Pesach! You see us trying? On Shavuos, what do we read about? Matzah Torah. On the flip side, many sources indicate that there's also an aspect of HaKri'ah Me'orer Tazman. That every single parsha that we read every week is indicating what that week is about. That there's a deep connection between the part of the cycle of the year that we're in and the Torah portion that we're reading. I strongly suspect that it's not in any way accidental that we read this pasuk and get into these inyanim in this time of year. That Ki Adam Etzazek comes up here. Because while the tree itself is judged over here and we go through that personal judgment as a tree over here every year, we're standing on the precipice of Rosh Hashanah. And the Torah is telling us through the very opening pasukim, Shoftim, my source, Shoftim v'shotrim titen lacha b'chol she'arecha. Set up for yourselves, judges and officers in all of your gates, as we come into this time of year, into Elul leading into Rosh Hashanah, to set up officers, to set up judges, to judge ourselves. Are we channeling all of our creative energy singularly to producing fruit? Are we channeling our Mayim Chaim? And put those at your borders, at your gates. Whether they be the gates of our lives to reestablish boundaries to make sure that we're only channeling things in the way that they're meant to be channeled, or for us to establish ourselves literally, the Sefer Chas do talk about it, whether it's the gate, literal gates of ourselves to reestablish those gates, our eyes and what we're looking at, our ears and what we're listening to, our mouth and what we're eating, our nose and what we're smelling, that all of the gates of ourselves will be taken from the most. That it's a time of year to remember what are we trying to take in and what are we trying to produce. And to what extent are we living up to a tree? To what extent am I only taking in Mayim Chaim? And to what extent am I using every ounce of that Mayim Chaim, every ounce of that life force within me to produce fruit? Because as I come to Rosh Hashanah for myself, that's part of how I'm going to be judged. Bezrat Hashem, we should be zocheh to live up to a tree, to live up to the image of a tree. We should be zocheh over the next few years and for the rest of our lives to always take in only the best of the world around us, to soak in what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to soak in, to channel every ounce of what we soak in and every ounce of life force that God bestows upon us to produce fruit in this world. That Bezrat Hashem, when we come to the end of that cycle, we'll be able to gather in everything that we've produced, look back and take with us all of what we've produced, all of those peirot with us to Olam HaMet, Bezrat Hashem. Shana Tova, everybody.